You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll talk about reparations, which San Francisco and California are crafting recommendations on.
Reparations, simply put, embodies the vaccine to rid this country of that evil of treating black folks in such a bad, inhumane way. We even gave reparations to poor whites who couldn't get in to schools like Sarah Lawrence, Harvard. Land-grant colleges were established. That's reparations. The GI Bill for persons who went into war. So why would we change from the thought and idea of giving reparations to black folk?
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. This year, both San Francisco and California have formed advisory committees to formulate a plan for reparations for African Americans, to study and work to make right the harms done by slavery, segregation, and systemic racism. San Francisco's committee was formed in May as a result of legislation introduced by Supervisor Shimon Walton in January 2020. One local leader is involved in both committees, the Reverend Dr. Amos C. Brown, senior pastor of the historic Third Baptist Church of San Francisco and president of the San Francisco branch of the NAACP. We talked about California's long history of explicit and brutal racism and what form reparations could take in this state and city. San Francisco, over the past year, formed this African American Reparations Advisory Committee, and the state has also developed a committee to consider reparations. You're a member of both, as I understand it, and there's a lot to discuss there. But first, what are your thoughts on the development of these committees and that it has taken until now for the state and local governments to consider reparations?
Well, in terms of the local committee, the NAACP was the sole organization, along with the Black Faith Community. We broached the notion of the idea of reparations for black people, for all the evils that the state and this local community have committed against black people since 1850s. The first governor of this state of California, Peter Burnett, was an arch racist. He, when he led the first wagon train westward in 1843, stipulated that no blacks or mulatto will be permitted to be in this wagon train. And after he got up to the Oregon Territory, that later became the state of Oregon, when he founded that first community there, Germantown, his first official act of business was not how roads should be built or how a cabin should be built. His first official act of business was a law that was named for him, the Peter Burnett flogging law, that stipulated no blacks or mulattoes would be able to settle in this town. If they are caught here, they'd be beaten every 6 months until they leave town. That was in the psyche, the soul, the spirit, the blood and bones of that man. And when gold was struck down here in California, up near Sutter's Field, he left Oregon and came down here, got involved in politics up there at Sacramento, and was able to emerge as the first governor of the state of California. And before he left office, 1851, in disgrace because some debts back in the Midwest caught up with him, he was trying to get through the assembly a bill that would stipulate no blacks would be permitted to settle in California. I cite all of this history to say from day one, this state was infected with the virus of racialized politics and led by the first governor. And then there was that famous civil rights case of the West involving a young man named R.C. Lee, 19 years old, who was brought from my native state of Mississippi as an enslaved man by Charles Stovall, who came westward for health reasons and to build a school up at Sacramento. Long short of it is, Stovall tried to kidnap this young man, R.C. Lee, and take him back to Mississippi as an enslaved man, though California was a free state. And he was so slick, so cunning that after he left office, was able to get on the state Supreme Court. And when the case of Arcee Lee got to the state Supreme Court, it was Peter Burnett who voted with the minority view that he should be sent back to Mississippi with Stovall as a runaway enslaved man. That happened in this state, in this city. Well, fast forward to the 1940s, during World War II, blacks were recruited to work in the shipyards, building ships, to work as longshoremen to unload ships and to provide personnel for the railroads to transport soldiers off to war in Europe. So obviously, black people built the economy of this Bay Area. And after the war was over, they all thought that blacks were going to go back south, but they did not go back. And consequently, because they didn't go back, San Francisco specifically came up with a program in 1948, led by Ali Otto and Justin Herman. What was that program? So-called urban renewal. But it wasn't about urban renewal. It was about black removal. So that consequently, black folks were pushed out of this city by the policy decisions of the Redevelopment Commission. Now, that says in common, simple logic, San Francisco owed black folks something. They were wrong. Black folks were wrong, I repeat. And in the best of biblical and spiritual ethics, if you wrong someone, you make amends and you show fruits of repentance. You make up to the person whom you wrong. And that's the reason why morally and ethically, San Francisco specifically, and this state in general, owed reparations to African Americans.
And one of the key things that the State Reparations Committee was working on is drafting an apology, acknowledging the harm done. I mean, it's such a key part, and it was a key part of the reparations for Japanese Americans after the forced removal and incarceration of people of Japanese descent during World War II. What makes an apology genuine, especially for a harm so vast as what these reparations committees are responding to?
Well, the basic thing is this. If you say you're sorry, you got to show it. Mm-hmm. Even the Bible says you got to show fruits of repentance. And it's not enough to give just words. And even today, that's happening in California so much in a blatant way, but you have voter suppression all over this nation, throughout the South, throughout the Bible Belt, where people claim to believe in Jesus, but they're not believing in the right Jesus. They are believing in this civil religious notion of white supremacy. Even the Southern Baptist Convention, that was founded in 1845. Why? Because white missionaries said we're going to keep our slaves. Nobody's going to tell us what to do with our slaves. That's why it came to be in 1845. And that's the denominational body that's the largest Protestant expression in America. And they are today against critical race theory. Mm-hmm. It's nothing but telling the truth about the wrongs, the inhumane treatment of that 400-year Atlantic slave trade. All critical race theory is about telling the story of how black folks were lynched in Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and Texas. And Mississippi led the number of lynchings from 1882 to 1968, 581. That is a fact, but you have people like Mitch McConnell, you have McCarthy, and people in the Republican Party who are going to tell black folks, forget about slavery, forget about segregation, forget about lynchings. That is evil. That is inhumane, and it shows that this white supremacy has no conscience, has no sense of ethics and fairness, but is about keeping white folks in control and living out the lie that was told by Aristotle, one of the founders of Western thought, who said during the 4th century BC, before Jesus of Nazareth was born, he said, the black man or the Ethiopian is inferior because his skin is black. And number two, Aristotle said, the black man or the Ethiopian would never be capable of self-governance. He would always have to have a white man or white woman over him. That's where this virus of racism and white privilege and superiority began. And that's been in the psyche of too many church folk, too many politicians, and too many educators. And that's not to make a blanket indictment on any one person who is white.
Of course not.
I'm just telling the truth. And the evidence is there in the historical record.
I'm speaking with Dr. Amos Brown, senior pastor of the Third Baptist Church of San Francisco and president of the San Francisco branch of the NAACP. Can reparations begin to undo that? I mean, you're tracing this, you know, back to history far, far, far back before a lot of, you know, of our thinking even goes.
Yes, it can undo it. It will show that you are making efforts to correct. If a person is sick, you get a doctor. If a person is sick, you get some medicine. Reparations, simply put, embodies the doctor, the medication, the vaccine to rid this country of that evil of treating black folks in such a bad, inhumane way because of the color of their skin. We did it for the Jews. We did it for the Japanese. We even gave reparations to poor whites who couldn't get in to schools like Sarah Lawrence, Harvard, Princeton, Yale. What happened? Land-grant colleges were established. Junior colleges. That's reparations. And even the homesteaders of the West who left the East and came to Oklahoma, these other Western states, they were able to get land for about $16 an acre. That's reparations. The GI Bill for person who went into war to defend this democracy. That was to provide housing and other amenities for those veterans. So why would we change from the principle, from the thought and idea of giving reparations to black folk?
What will it take? On what scale do these reparations need to happen? Again, because of just the scale of the harm that was done being so immense.
The first thing you need to begin with is education. Mm-hmm. The educational inequities. A study just came out this week indicating that now the life expectancy of African Americans is 3.3 years less than that of the white majority population. Our lives have been cut short because of oppression, because of a lack of education. That's what that study revealed, that in order to correct that, you need quality education across the board. That's number one. The people will be enlightened. They will know. Remember, during the days of enslavement, they would beat black folks. They would cut their fingers off. They'd cut their ears off if they were caught reading. That is a fact, and our audience should understand that. A law was established to forbid black people from simply learning, knowing the facts of history, gaining those tools that will give you credentialing to do what? To get a job. That's the next area. Economic empowerment. Economic empowerment. Jobs, contracts. The present record today reveals great discrimination, even in San Francisco. Look at all this construction that's going on in this town. Look at all the cranes. Look at all the men who are digging in the ground, putting down pipes, dealing with the infrastructure. You don't see too many black folks. Only black people you see, basically somebody maybe who is holding up a flag to direct traffic. But to get those good paying jobs, we don't get them. So consequently, what's happening today? The median income, per capita income for black people in San Francisco is an infinitesimal $30,000 a year. But for whites, it's $110,000.
Wow.
What a glaring, gaping disparity. So education, economic empowerment would be a part of reparations. And then number three, housing.
Mm-hmm.
Housing. Back in 1857, black folks could not get housing here, couldn't get jobs. You couldn't serve on juries. So what happened? 800 blacks got on that ship, the Commodore, owned by Captain Negley. And they responded to the invitation of Governor Douglas up in British Columbia. He said to them, if they won't respect you in San Francisco, get aboard Negley's Commodore ship. Come on up to Canada. I've set aside land on Victoria Island where you'll be able to build community, where you will have jobs, where you have schools. That happened. 1858. Black folks had to leave San Francisco because it was so oppressive. So we need to look at this matter of housing, because they couldn't get housing then and can't get housing today. We need housing for black people, the houses that we were pushed out of, and we need to get rid of this lottery system that has kept black people from getting their fair share. And the Department of Housing and Urban Development has been complicit in this evil of denying black people fair housing. Restricted covenants happened in San Francisco. Even Willie Mays, the great baseball player, couldn't get a house out around Forest Hills. Read the record. It's all in the papers, the old papers. It's there. The evidence is there. So we need to look at the matter of housing. Fair, affordable housing for black people, that we will get our fair share. When you look at our population, we've fallen from 13 to 14% of the population in the 70s and the 60s. Now we're down to about 4.5 to 5%. And some are saying since the 2020 census, it just might be down to 3.9%. So we have housing. And then you have health care, mental and physical health care,
mm-hmm,
that should be provided by these health facilities that are here in this county. And then the other item is cultural celebration. Think about it. In the 40s, we had the Harlem of the West here in San Francisco, and all up and down Fillmore Street from California to Fulton, blacks owned hotels. They own grocery stores. They own barber shops. They own everything practically that other folks were owning. But redevelopment tore up the Harlem of the West, tore up the Fillmore. And that was our watering hole. The Japanese have their watering hole where they celebrate their culture in Japantown. The Chinese have Chinatown. The Latinx have the mission, most of it, even though they've been invaded. And they celebrate Cinco de Mayo in a big way. Well, black folks deserve to have a place, a watering hole, I repeat, a meeting place But right now, the sad fact is, there's only one corner left in the old Fillmore, right there at Eddy and Fillmore, that Heritage Building morally should go to black hands who are competent, qualified, astute business persons, so that we can have an expression of Swahili town, Yoruba town, Africa town. We deserve it. If others can get it, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And then you have white folks who have ownership of most of the financial district.
So these commissions are going to be meeting, as I understand it, over the next few years, and you have this kind of limited time frame to make recommendations for how to address wrongs that have occurred over so many generations. What are your hopes for this starting out?
Well, really, you don't need a whole lot of time. We've studied this issue for years. You mm-hmm. had the Unfinished Agenda Commission under Mayor Jordan. You had the Out-Migration Task Force that I served on, too, under Mayor Newsom. And when nationally you look around, you see the Kerner Commission report. Mm-hmm. You go back about 70-plus years, and you discover a Swedish sociologist, Gunnar Myrdal, who did a definitive study called The American Dilemma. And it was dealing about race and economic deprivations and how America was schizophrenic. Preached one thing, said one thing, said all kinds of house-sounding things about one nation under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all, but we did not actualize it. We were not practical. We didn't follow through on it. So really, you don't need a whole lot of time. As Dr. King, my teacher, said, the time is always right to do right. And I've outlined the areas that, for the most part, I'm sure that the commission, both state and local, will come down on in terms of programmatic efforts to provide reparations. And you don't need a whole lot of time. And as Nike says in its slogan, all we need to do is just do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you need in order to just do it? Is this a question of resources being allocated by local and state government?
Local government, private philanthropy, corporations, if they got a conscience, if they have a sense of rightness, they would pitch in to a reparations fund. So it's at both levels, the private and public sectors, that we need to put in place reparations. Now, I'll give you one classic example right now. Mm-hmm. Out there in Sunnydale, where that housing development is, do you know that even the Park and Rec Department would not provide the same quality of a new gymnasium there as they have done in OMI out in the Richmond? I got the facts the other day. Did they scale back? And the question is, why? Why would you scale back on the building that you're putting out there? Because it's where black folks are. There should be equal treatment, equal access. We're all human. And we need to stop this thing of treating people wrong because their exterior features are different. We're all members of the human race.
Absolutely. Dr. Brown, is there anything you wanted to add about reparations that I didn't give you a chance to say?
Well, I think I pretty much covered the subject. That people of goodwill who have a conscience and know how to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, they should have no issue with what I have outlined during our conversation today. And you can't say it has been done. It has been done. But you got to make sure that you treat black people like they are members of the human family.
Yes. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
That was the Reverend Dr. Amos C. Brown, senior pastor of the historic Third Baptist Church of San Francisco and president of the San Francisco branch of the NAACP. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic. Before I let you go today, at the Public Press, which is Civic's parent organization, we've been working really hard during this pandemic to pursue angles we're not seeing much coverage of elsewhere, or to take a more systemic look at the issues that are surfacing in the headlines. The San Francisco Public Press is a nonprofit, and we're inspired by the public radio model. That's the idea that people who are able to support the work that we do so everyone can have access to it without paywalls or ads. If you think we're onto something, we'd very much appreciate if you could show your support. You can do that by going to sfpublicpress.org/donate or by helping us get the word out about this show. Subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use or leave us a review. It really does help. So thank you.